So FedSat goals, let me come to that. We wanted to build and operate a satellite. Quite simple goals, a lot more simple than turned out to, as it initially thought, than turned out to be, in fact. A number of people, advisors from overseas, particularly Gil Ousley. I don't know if you guys have met Gil, but because NASA was providing us with an instrument, they've been involved in SAC A, B, and C in Argentina, Ørsted, Denmark, CHAMP, GRACE, small satellite projects around the world, and they want to ensure that they're working with creditable organizations and that they're performing well and adhering to various engineering standards, etc. So they use Gil Ousley as an advisor to keep in touch with those projects around the world. And Gil's been absolutely fantastic in supporting us. And I only discovered a few months back now when I gave a talk to down at Tidbin Villa that, in fact, Gil Ousley was the United States advisor on RESAT. And here he is, 30-odd years later, back working on the next major satellite project in Australia. And he commented that if you knew how difficult it was going to be and the challenges you'd face and have to overcome, you probably wouldn't have started. It just seemed so daunting at times. But through that, nurturing innovative ideas and experience through this area of complex technology, exciting to see the links work between the research organizations and industry, and building up capabilities in space technologies and qualification procedures, and fostering recognition of Australian capabilities around the world. FedSat's an experimental microsatellite. It'll be operational by the end of this year. It's our space laboratory. It's the centre's space laboratory. It's an experimental satellite, as I said, and not designed to provide an operational service in any of the areas, but in fact designed, in fact, to provide us with research data in areas that I'll come to very shortly, and of course showcasing Australian technology in this area. The mission characteristics: the satellite mass is around 60 kilograms. It's a half a metre cube. The boom is about 2.5 metres. It's polar, sun-synchronous, circular, 800 kilometres, and high inclination. And, of course, that's dictated because it's a piggyback payload. Japan is launching three micros along with their prime payload, Adios 2, which is about 4.5 tonnes, I think, and quite a large satellite sitting atop the H2A. And FedSat will be the first foreign satellite launched by Japan. So the orbit's dictated for us. Launch, as I said, December, 2 weeks tomorrow, from Tanegashima. And now Australia, now there's legislation enacted, we're actually a launching state, and we got our launch certificate about a week ago, signed by Ian McFarlane. They lost our application. Wonderful people. In fact, when we started down this track, there was no legislation in place. There was no space licensing and safety office. And only since we started, and there was no space frequency division in the ACA, that these things have come into being, and they have added significantly to the costs of this program. Significantly. I mean, processing a frequency application is $186 an hour, and the process takes, well, we got our licenses for the S-band a couple of weeks ago as well, and that's taken about 4 years. So you're facing enormous, enormous sums of money in this business. I mean, we didn't have to pay all of the equivalent amount in cash. We worked with them. Fortunately, our chairman, Tony Staley, was Minister for Communications some time back, and he was responsible for that department. So I used Tony. We got in there. And to help process our application, in fact, we put people into the ACA to work with them and do all the legwork in defining our requirements and getting authorities and listings with the ITU, etc. So that worked well. Good cooperation. On board FedSat, these are the experiments. If ever I build another small satellite, it will be quite different. It will have one payload and one objective. This is far too complex. It's got a communications payload on board, which has three payloads. Baseband processor, smart modem, Ka band system, and a UHF band messaging system. But importantly, what it's about is the Ka band will be onboard processing is based on gallium arsenide micromonolithic integrated circuit devices, and so we're qualifying those for space application. And advanced earth terminals is very much part of this whole process. In fact, when again designing a space project like this, it's important to recognize right at the outset there are two important elements to the project. One is the space component and one is the ground component. They're equally important and they must be nurtured along with each other rather than focus on one and then shift to the other. And certainly in the area of Ka band earth terminals, UTS has done a tremendous job in that area of technology. Satellite systems, as I've said, there'll be a high performance computer on board. The exciting aspect to that is that it's a board that contains field programmable gate arrays, and we can reconfigure the performance of that. That's why Johns Hopkins calls it an adaptive instrument module, using reconfigurable logic. So once it's performed a certain function, it can be reprogrammed from the ground station to do a different function. So it's starting to address this issue of redundancy in space. That's why NASA's particularly interested in it. DLR are interested in it, as well as companies like Astrium in Germany. So that's a good project. And that's run by Anwar Dawood at QUT. Space science, as I've said, Brian Fraser, ionospheric GPS soundings, atmospheric soundings, magnetospheric studies, etc. And navigation, Queensland University of Technology, the navigation program is now led by Werner Emdahl and Rod Walker, investigating various aspects of GPS applications. Or it's just some ideas about GPS meteorology using the GPS constellation and LIM sounding as FedSat goes over the horizon to look at, take slices through the atmosphere and ionosphere and invert those data in the atmospheric case in terms of temperature and humidity. And this is becoming a routine tool now in weather prediction. Space weather, investigating the magnetic field streaming effects through solar radiation and the sources of various disturbances in the magnetosphere, and looking at the magnetic waves as they bounce around that area, their impact through the polar regions, and how that energy is transmitted to Earth. It's becoming a popular field of science now, internationally, space weather, ultimately to develop a prediction service so that satellites can be controlled depending on whether radiation effects are anticipated to damage the space systems. That's just a diagram of some of the communications applications that we've got planned with FedSat, Ka band, UHF, messaging, paging, monitoring services, and as I say, that's the payload that will be flying on two Asian satellites shortly. In fact, the flight model's been delivered to Korea, and we're designing the flight model with Singapore as we speak. Let's have a look at FedSat now. I'm not sure I'm out of time. We constructed FedSat in Canberra at the Mitchell Laboratories of AusSpace, one of our partners, using the clean room facilities there. Clean room that was designed primarily for the AATSR project, the Advanced Long Track Scanning Radiometer project, that is now flying on Envisat. And I might add, in terms of quality of imagery on sea surface temperature and ground surface temperature, to rave reviews in Europe and North America, though you'd never hear about it in Australia. Australian designed, Australian built, flying on Endosat, producing fantastic data. And it was built in this clean room in Canberra, so we essentially degraded the quality of the clean room from 10,000 to 100,000, because we're not dealing with optical systems, and we don't need that class, so Hospace agreed to do that.